You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
As a candidate in 2008, Barack Obama pledged to make the federal government more transparent than it had been during the Bush administrations. But at the Treasury Department, at least, that particular campaign promise hasn't been fulfilled. Joining me now to explain some of the recent problems that the Treasury has had with transparency is Daniel Indiviglio, staff editor for TheAtlantic.com. You can find a link to the post that he wrote about this on our show page, and I'm pleased to welcome Mr. Indiviglio to today's underreported segment. Hello.
Hi, thanks for having me.
In your article, you detail three instances where the Treasury Department has been less than forthcoming. Has this been a problem since the beginning of the Obama administration?
Well, as a journalist, it's kind of a constant struggle to get good information from the Treasury, I can attest to. Usually, just in general, it's rare that they give you high quality on the record comments. When you try to get data out of them, there's a lot of pushback. Obviously they publish a great number of things, but a lot of the things that journalists in particular are interested in aren't as easy to get our hands on.
Is it any different than it was during the Bush years? Is this just the kind of thing we can expect from a government department?
Well, it's a little hard to compare the two, mostly because the Treasury is doing so much more now than they did during the Bush years after the financial crisis. There's so many more programs that they're involved with, owning shares of public companies and, guaranteeing securities and all that sort of thing. So it's kind of hard to compare the two situations, but definitely it seems like for a high bar of transparency that was, promised, it doesn't seem that they're really fulfilling that.
Well, let's look at these three cases. And before we do, I wonder if these are just the three we know about. Do you think that we're likely to have more instances of this sort?
Oh, well, certainly. These three that I kind of outlined in my piece were really just sort of this week. That's why I thought it was worth writing, because these are three kind of interesting situations, and literally within 2 days of each other, they all kind of came up. So yeah, who knows?
Well, during the financial meltdown, AIG got a $182 billion loan from the government. Earlier this month, the Treasury issued a report that predicted that all but $5 billion of it would be returned. But then didn't Special Inspector General for the Troubled Asset Relief Program, TARP, Neil Barofsky, come up with a very different number?
Yeah, well, he not so much came up with another number, but more questioned why they had suddenly found $40 billion in the couch cushions kind of over, a six-month period. What had happened is their initial estimate for the AIG bailout and how much it will cost taxpayers was based on a methodology that they used to value really all of their assets of that sort that they've come to own through the bank bailout. Well, what happened was AIG released their exit strategy, and as a result, Treasury revised their methodology. So they published kind of a new report that said, well, now look, we're only going to lose $5 billion. But they didn't really explain that they changed their methodology in that report very adequately. And then moreover, when auditors look at this again in November for their next auditing report, it's going to still reflect that old loss value of around $45 billion probably, maybe a little better, but certainly not the only $5 billion loss that they reported in September.
So is this a matter of just trying to make things look rosier? Because $40 billion in likely losses is a big difference, and I was wondering whether one of the departments was using a Mac and the other one was using a PC.
Well, there's two sides to every story, right? So it depends who you ask. I mean, the Treasury Department, who I've talked to extensively about this, they swear the $5 billion figure is fair. What that's based on basically is now they're going to have eventually the idea, if the exit strategy works as planned, they're going to have something like 1.65 billion shares of AIG that they're going to own, which is about 92% of the company. Now, if they were to sell those all at the market value for when that report was released, then there would only be a $5 billion loss. Now, the problem is that obviously relies on a lot of different assumptions coming true. AIG needs to sell a lot of its divisions in a certain way. They need to make that all work. And then also it assumes that, in fact, Treasury can sell 1.65 billion shares to the market at that price, which is an awful lot of shares to pour onto the market. So it's kind of dependent on a lot of things. Now, the old methodology was something that, accountants and auditors, it was a bit more conservative, to be sure. But it was based on probable losses that could occur through credit lines that AIG still has and, that sort of thing, and what preferred shares would have been worth. So it's kind of – we have to wait and see how it turns out, really. But that's the problem with these things.
Well, Mr. Borofsky, who, as I said, is Special Inspector General for TARP, told the New York Times that the Treasury was providing incomplete information. Was that the first time that allegation about transparency had been made?
I mean, I'm not sure if it's the first time or not, but that is what he alleged.
This sounds like one government agency is being critical of another one. Does he have more independence than the people at Treasury?
Well, I mean, he's sort of the special prosecutor, not really prosecutor, but a special inspector, right? So it's sort of his job to hold these guys to the fire and make sure that what they're doing is, you know, upright and always correct. So really, it's his job to kind of make trouble for them, and he has been sort of a constant pebble in their shoe since he's been at work there.
Well, so should we trust his calculation over Treasury's?
It depends on your view. I mean, it depends. Obviously, for people in the investment community, you could kind of make these estimates yourself. You could look at all the information available in the market, decide how those shares, if they are going to dilute the value of AIG, if they're really worth what they say they're worth once this all goes down. It's hard to say who you should trust. I mean, it's really a matter of opinion almost.
Well, in that case, it's a matter of how you interpret the numbers, as you say. But the second recent transparency issue at Treasury is a lot more clear.
Yeah.
It's a Freedom of Information Act request from a Bloomberg reporter. What did Mark Pittman request through a FOIA inquiry?
Right. So what he wanted to know was through the financial crisis, one of the interventions that the Treasury did was they decided to insure a very large portfolio of toxic securities that Citigroup owns. So what Pittman wanted, from what I understand, is he wanted a list of those securities. He wanted to know what they were and some information about them. Now, instead of providing that or even providing a reason why they couldn't provide that, the Treasury responded 20 months later with about, I think, something like 500 or 600 emails that were any kind of useful information where you might have gleaned something about these securities was actually redacted. And instead, it just consisted of stuff like, hey, how was your lunch? And, it's going to be a busy day tomorrow. And those sort of things instead of anything useful. So to say the least, Bloomberg wasn't pleased with what they got from Treasury on that one.
So they waited 20 months and then they stonewalled.
Exactly. And I think really here, it's understandable if there is a legitimate reason why the Treasury can't release this kind of data, then give that reason, right? I think the idea is that if transparency were good, then we'd understand why they are not providing data, and they wouldn't instead try to give this useless stuff that no one wants anyway instead.
How did it come out that the Treasury was working with an outside consulting firm named Facile? I love that name, Facile, although it's spelled P-H-A-C-I-L.
Yeah, that was actually through a report in the Washington Examiner by J.P. Frere. He did some research and found out that this was, one or two of the consultancy firms working on FOIAs for the Treasury. That was the case.
How did the Treasury respond when you asked them about their relationship with Facile?
Well, it's interesting. The problem with Facile, and it's fine to work with outside agencies, but the problem that this reporter from the Washington Examiner found was on their website, they had a job listing for FOIA services, presumably with the Treasury or something like that. And for that job description, it actually said something like, let me give you the exact words. It said to withhold information from release to the public as being one of the key attributes that would make a good employee there, which obviously, if the charge of being transparent, isn't something that you'd hope that they were looking for, right?
It's amazing that they were that transparent about that. I mean, to put that in a job description.
Well, right. Now, Facile came back after that news story hit, and they changed the posting without really saying anything about it other than just doing it. And instead, they added on a little bit to say, well, that is information that's considered classified or sensitive and falls outside FOIA guidelines, of course, that sort of thing. Now, and according to them, it was just a mistake. So, again, here it kind of depends who you believe, right? Now, according to Treasury, they're just a consultant, and they've been there since 2007. So they say there's, no intended impropriety on that, in that case either, of course. That's their line. So, it is what it is. This all boils down to who you trust and if there's sort of a culture there of failing to be transparent or not.
My guest is Daniel Indaviglio, staff editor for TheAtlantic.com. We're talking about transparency or lack of transparency at the Treasury. on today's underreported segment. Has anybody talked to Tim Geithner about these and the third thing we're going to discuss?
Well, Geithner tends to be hard to reach. you can't really get him on the phone, so I'm not sure if anyone has directly talked to him. But, I mean, people have definitely talked to Treasury officials on this. And, of course, I mean, they vehemently disagree, right? They think that they reveal a lot of information to the public and all that sort of thing. So
there was also a report about a potential problem with the estimates of return for the Treasury's toxic asset portfolio. Why was that an issue of transparency?
Well, this is, again, kind of one of these complicated situations where the Treasury has these assets in this portfolio, and actually in this case it was Bloomberg again who did an analysis and said, well, it looks like they're going to make 36%. Now, Treasury actually has a different estimate. Theirs is between 19 and 52%. But somebody that CNBC actually spoke with who did an estimate, of a finance professor from the University of Louisiana named Dr. Linus Wilson, what he found was that some of the calculations are probably a little bit creative there. They're doing things like taking just regular averages instead of weighted averages for these securities, so that the number is looking probably a lot better than it might. So I guess his calculation said it's probably closer to 5%, so quite a bit lower than even 19 to 52.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, so again, it really boils down to, and then the problem with a lot of this is that it boils down to, you know, who do you believe? You know, whose accountants are providing better estimates? And the ideal way to do that really would be for the Treasury to hire a couple of different independent third-party analysts and get some scenarios out there and at least, you know, explain that that's what they're doing.
Do you think it's just a coincidence that all of these less than total disclosures are related to the bailout, TARP, and the financial rescue packages that the Treasury Department and the Federal Reserve have put together since the beginning of the financial meltdown, I guess, beginning with the Bush administration but continuing through the Obama administration?
I guess it kind of depends on how you define coincidence. Obviously, a lot of what the Treasury does now is, in fact, to deal with these sorts of things. So when they're making mistakes, if they're making mistakes, it's probably going to be in conjunction with what they're doing a lot of, right? So, you know, in this case, I think the timing is really what some people are angry about. I mean, they released a lot of seemingly positive stuff about the bailout, you know, with that AIG figure we talked about earlier, and even with this toxic security report that it suggests it's going to be a relatively favorable return. A lot of this was released, you know, right before a big midterm election, right? So that, I think, is what has a lot of people kind of annoyed.
Now, the Atlantic.com has just posted a rebuttal from the Treasury to your post, and
That's right.
We're going to put that on our show page as well. But what argument are they making, and have they really answered your charges well? Do you think?
Well, I mean, they're arguing a lot of what I've said kind of in their defense, right? They, for example, in the AIG situation, they said, well, you know, the situation changed, so our valuation changed. And kind of that's that, and our valuation makes sense considering what the world looks like with an AIG rescue. Now, that doesn't really answer the question of that Mr. Borofsky had, which was, well, why aren't you being more transparent about that and saying that this valuation is not going to line up with what auditors say in November, right? So that's, you know, what he wants, I guess, made clear. They don't really answer that. They just kind of say, well, this is what makes sense, and that's why we did it. In terms of the Freedom of Information Act requests, yeah, I kind of went over that, too. You know, they say the relationship with FASL was, you know, completely fine, and they're just another contractor. And, in fact, that relationship apparently expired in September, to where now they're just kind of a subcontractor under some other division that's not a part of the Treasury. But, you know, they're kind of answering these things in roundabout ways, but I don't think many people are that satisfied.
Well, are they being open with other Freedom of Information Act requests?
It's hard to say. I mean, you know, there's so many of them out there. I'm sure some of them they are, and others they might be putting off. But, I mean, I don't have any personal experience. I haven't filed any with them recently, so I can't say personally if, you know, how they're doing.
Well, I want to thank you so much for talking with us today. Daniel Indaviglio is a staff editor for the Atlantic.com. He's been talking to us about transparency at the Treasury as for today's underreported segment. And as I said before, you can find both his a link to what he wrote on our show page and also the Treasury's response. Thank you so much, Daniel.
Sure. Thanks for having me.